is not my show, it's Joe's show. And we're going to, the whole intention behind tonight is to have parent community members be able to kind of understand what TAP1 actually is and what we're trying to do with the schools. We had a great professional development day today with all staff members and kind of talking about what are some of the procedures and protocols. So I can answer questions towards the end here, so I'm going to be here this evening, but we are scheduled from 5:30 to 6:30 here. So with that, Joe, I'm going to turn it over to you. So
okay.
Thanks for attending.
All right, perfect. Turn mine on so I don't get any feedback here. Okay, can you Elva hear me?
I'll typically probably just take this off and then if you see any problems, take it off. I appreciate you guys coming. So this first kind of 5-10-15 minutes, maybe these community meetings are one thing to get to know us and also ask some questions based on, okay, I've got a third grader this week or I've got a high schooler. If I'm concerned about it, hey, how are you?
Good.
Love you. Thanks for always coming to support me. And sure. You know you've heard this like 700 times, but I'm glad you're here because otherwise we'd only have like three of them. And I'd be like, hey, hello. but anyway, it's kind of a time for you guys to answer those questions. I can talk to you. So you hear it straight from the horse's mouth where you might get a fourth grader come home and tell you something absolutely different than what we taught them because they typically understand it. Or, whatever. So anybody have any questions of what we're teaching the kids specifically? If not, I'll just kind of go over it. All right. Okay, perfect. Go ahead and real quick before we get started. Go to the next one. So there's my background up top there. I was only at the sheriff's office about 8.5 years, right? So not forever. But what happened 23 years ago in Jefferson County? Why do you think I'm here?
Columbine.
Yeah, Columbine High School, right? I wasn't there. I played baseball against Columbine Rebels about a month before it was shot up. So I was a senior in high school. So I came on in law enforcement 3 years later, right? Those were my coworkers, my peers, and still my sheriff at the time, Sheriff Stone, didn't get, without social media movement, he would have been like the Broward County Sheriff. He'd been removed from office, 3 days after Columbine. But back then, somehow, even being an elected official, he was able to write out his last year of being a sheriff after Columbine, the last couple years. It was kind of nuts, right? This day and age, it'd go viral. Completely messed that up. Nope, you're gone. We'd have a special election. But anyway, I came on and I met Sheriff Stone when he pinned my badge on. He kind of hit out for a year and a half, did his term. He was a county commissioner prior to, so lifelong politician. I literally didn't see the guy until he came down. We became commissioned deputies, pinned my badge on. I'm like, oh, there he is. Anyway, then he was gone. So I didn't respond to Columbine, but obviously being in just new to law enforcement in general and in Colorado, right? When I came through the academy 3 years later, it was 24 hours of active shooter. Now you're getting rifle trained out of the academy. You don't have to wait, because back then we just had a lot of pistols, some mini 14s. A couple of the special people had rifles, but we were outgunned at the time. So in Colorado, at least, almost every patrol officer got long rifles, by 2000, 2001, right, to deal with this new threat. So obviously I have intimate knowledge of what happened there. And I went to Deer Creek Middle School and Platte Canyon High School, right? I went to those two shootings personally. Platte Canyon High School, you guys may have seen some of that if you're in the educational arena. It's the I Love You Guys Foundation, the standard response protocol. Those are the Emily Keys family. It's the girl who we lost at Platte Canyon. We saved one, lost one. I don't have a lot of time to talk about it. We only have an hour, but... So then we fast forward to Deer Creek Middle School, which was stopped by a middle school teacher at the time, Jeffco Public Schools, largest school district in Colorado at the time. Now Douglas County passed us. But we were still just doing the shelter in place, right, giving our staff one option. So you fast forward 11 years after Columbine. We got lucky, though, right? We weren't teaching fight back, barricade, just shelter in place, shut off the lights, hide over here. Even our big county, right? Two school shootings into it. A teacher jumped into action, right? He was out there. He started shooting from the outside in, and he was doing his, post-Columbine observation for the bus loop, make sure kids don't get a fist fight, kids get to their buses, but also, safety overwatch and at least a deterrent. That teacher jumped into action, right? The gunman came from the parking lot with the bolt action 30-06, right? Kind of the wrong gun to do a mass shooting, right? You only have five, kicks like a mule, not good for CQB. We got lucky, right? He shot two kids. Then between the second and third shot, the teacher, as the, first is, oh, it's a backfire of a car. That's natural. That's not a shooting. It's something else. Then sees the kids, the stimulus of the kids spreading. locks eyes with the guy. It had just snowed, right? I was at Subway about a mile and a half away. And this is about 1.8 miles from Columbine as the crows fly. So in between that second and third shot, the teacher, being a hunter, realized that he had to... Mind you, country bumpkins. You guys all shoot stuff, right? What does this mean? If he's not a good born American, he goes, I saw this. Hey, he's out of ammo. I can go tackle him. It's not like Hollywood. So he goes, I knew that was my chance to go get the 20 yards and get him. So he tackled him. A principal helped him. They had him disarmed. I was the second cop on scene. In about a minute and a half, we dropped our Subway, went over there. When I showed up, they were like flagging us down, right? There's some backpacks. One kid was kind of flayed open a little bit. It wasn't a direct hit, luckily, but it blew him in half. So it kind of just cut him open, you know, that 30-06 round. And then, you know, I see the principal's like, deputy, there's the gun. So I take that. What was crazy is some bus driver had zip ties. They already had him handcuffed. So he must have had some unruly, you know, passengers, because that's not standard issue from the bus barn, right? So they disarmed him, handcuffed him, had him in custody. But we got lucky. We didn't teach our teachers to interact, right, in the active shooter, whether it's indoor or outdoor. It was, okay, get away from it, lock the door, hide them. But we didn't empower them, hey, if you have to, fight, you know. Out of sheer luck, you know, that teacher jumped in action to save some kids. So one other girl got hit in the arm through the window because he shot the kid kind of and just shot into that main entrance, you know, that glass area. It fragmented a bit. It hit her in the hand, in the arm. She was in and out of the hospital in a day or two with some surgery. But luckily, we didn't lose any kids there. But had he got off the three more rounds or something, you know, maybe we would have lost a kid there. But it was the quick thinking of the teacher, obviously, and us a lot of luck on our end that he was a hunter, had a little firearm knowledge, and realized, ooh, okay, here's my plan. And he always talked about it too. He said, you know, in that interview, he goes, you know, I always told my kids I'd do whatever I could to save them. So that kind of it spurred me to build this program, is my point, right? So some of the things I put into this program for school faculty were things I saw at Platte Canyon High School, right? The first school shooting I went to. That was the one where he kept the little girls hostage up in Bailey, right? We did dual explosive breach on the room, saved one girl. And it was between that incident, maybe a lack of what was done by a staff member or police, right? And then we go to Platte Canyon or Deer Creek, and I saw a little bit of knowledge go a long way and save some kids. So I developed this Beyond the Lockdown program before it was mainstream, right? The Run, Hide, Fight came about the federal government right about 2012, right after Sandy Hook, you know, and Aurora movie theater shooting. Those two big shootings rocked the nation again. You know, our first elementary school sacked, you know, James Holmes killing, you know, 20, almost, you know, wounded 70, where the federal government finally had to come back and say, okay, no longer shelter in place. Remember, because that was Fort Hood. They used to teach the workplace, DOD, Navy, or FEMA pushes it out to the workplace. They follow the federal government's lead, right? They just still had the shelter in place to lock down. It's about 2012. They're like, okay, these shootings are happening everywhere. We need to give at least adults more options. Hey, if you can't lock somebody out because I'm in the room with you, then you might want to fight. Or if you can get out of the facility, then evacuate, especially when it's just the adult workplace. You know, they don't have to worry about kids, or it's not the hospital where you got to worry about patients. So you see how we're kind of reactive, right? And the federal government's usually about 10, 12 years behind any idea, and sometimes it's not even the best idea, right? So I feel like I was way far ahead of the curve. Now, the Run, Hide, Fight program, whatever, it's everywhere. But, you know, we've been teaching it in rural Wyoming for 2009. We taught our first class in Riverton, Wyoming for 10 cops, 2008. Did all that area, you know, Lander, Riverton, BIE, Game and Fish. So a lot of the programs, the stuff I teach the police officers on the weekends here when we're up here, and also this Beyond the Lockdown, is built for rural, you know, communities like yourselves that have to do more with less, right? So it's common sense stuff. You don't have, you know, 40 cops here. You have 30 in the whole county with some higher patrol, but they don't all work at the same time. You got bad weather. You'll be lucky to have, you know, 8 cops here within the first 15 minutes, and are those 8 cops going to do the right thing? So there's a little bit of my background. Don't have time to go into it, but that's just kind of how this program is developed. So let me just touch the kids, right? So K-2, if you weren't here last year, you didn't hear anything about it, it's literally 15 minutes. We sit on their little rug. We talk about baby ducks, mama ducks, ninjas. They play hide and go seek. They think it's fun. And then we do that. What they did, already start doing fire drills at that age. So we just teach them how to do a fire drill, but we teach them hand signals. They all know what stop and go means, so that if it's an active shooter, And let's say they're trying to get their little kids from maybe the lunchroom back to a place to lock down, you know, how do I do that? And so it's 15 minutes. They think they're playing a game. They love it. It's follow the leader, baby duck, mama duck. That's literally the language we use. And I would really, if anybody is concerned about that piece, I'd love for you guys to come and check it out. It's hilarious what we do, but they learn from it. But it kind of gets them going into our program as they get older, right? 3 through 5 is group evacuations that are teacher-led, right? Same thing, learn the hand signals, stop, go. So the teacher can vet the halls to get them from point A to point B. And when we talk about evacuation, also think of it as me moving my students, not all the way out of the building, but maybe from the cafeteria, the library, or when we're rotating to specials, how do I get them from the hallway back to my classroom so I can safely barricade? So a lot of people think, well, why would I leave this room? Well, these shooters are doing them during passing period, during lunch hour, before school, after school, where we don't have that structure, because they don't want to defeat a commercial lock, right? They're smart. These kids have been going through these drills since they're in second grade. By the time they hit 10th grade, like the Parkland kid, they know how to defeat them, right? So we'll get into the history of the shootings the last 7 or 8 years, but they've all started 7:28 because school starts at 7:30. School resource officer shows up at 8. The bell rings at 7:30, so I'll hit you at 7:28 in the high school while we're all milling around going to school or going to our classrooms last minute. Lock me out of here. I'm in the halls with you. You know, or cafeteria, library, Rapo High School shooting in Colorado. It happened in the library. Lock me out of the library. I'm in this large library with you. So you either need to be fast or you need to fight back because there's nowhere to hide, right? So the kids are smart. They're defeating the old standard. Turn the lights off, lock the door, hide over here. Okay, I'll smuggle it in my backpack. We just had a six-year-old do it, right? And I'll get you in the classroom. Lock me out of here. I'm sitting right next to you in science room. So it's unfortunate, but we got to give our kids some options. So 3 through 5 is helping the teacher barricade because they're strong, especially the kids up here. You know, their country strong. So they're strong and they're actually self-sufficient. So we teach them how to use teamwork. We talk about how do you communicate, work together as a team. We look people in the eye. We start talking. Hey, help me with this desk. And it's amazing when we go to like little places like Claremont, Nevada, where there's super small classroom sizes and they're super remote. This last trip on Thursday with the students, I had fourth graders barricading the door in 20 seconds with no help of a staff member. It's unreal. These little kids are so good, and they think it's fun. It's better than sitting in the corner, turning their lights off, and being hushed over here by their teacher for 20 minutes during a drill. They feel powerless. At least we're giving them, you know, practice, and they're being active. They're being part of the team. I think it would reduce the anxiety. I'm not a psychologist, but I think when we turn off the lights and shove a bunch of kids over here, tell them to be quiet, gotta stay over here, you gotta be quiet, and then they're all sitting there like this. Versus, hey, grab that desk, turn off the lights, let's do this. They feel empowered, and it's like a twofold. They're helping, but it's also distracting them, right? So they're not traumatized when we're going through these lockdown drills, at least, you know, 2 times a year. So that's 3 through 5. 6 through 8 is middle school. Same thing, evacuation, stop, go, teacher-led. I'm going to show you guys that. I'm going to give you a little quick, really quick training here, like a workplace version, just to kind of know what we teach and why. Towards the end of this hour, but it's barricading, helping the staff member, and then we also do where, let's say, a teacher defends their classroom or an area, and they take the person down, and they ask for help only when they ask for help. If there's some kids in there that are willing to help, we teach them how to bear hug an arm, bear hug a leg, and use leverage like a wrestler, and hold them down so another adult can get there to help that staff member. But again, we only do that when the staff members yell, help, help, help. We teach the kids if you're willing to do so and help out, here's how you be resourceful. Instead of just doing a dog pile and doing nothing, let's use our resources wisely, use leverage. And you'll be surprised on how these sixth graders, they can hold me down, fourth graders, they're country strong. I don't know if they tackle goats and sheep up here. You know, they do a bunch of manual labor for you guys, so they're super strong. And they get it. And they'll hold me down, and I try to get up, and if they do it right, they spread their body weight out, use physics, I can't get up, right? So it's just buying time for another adult to come and help out. Now, high school, that's probably the most important program. And this is really how I developed this program, right? So we've been up here in Wyoming, I told you since 2008, all across everywhere doing the COPS, and back in the day doing some school districts, right? After Parkland, I got a call from a big superintendent up here. You know, I was on Highway 40, driving down from, I think, like Santa Fe to the Navajo Nation, right? And he goes, Joe, man, I can't stop thinking about those kids, those high school kids in Parkland. He goes, I feel like it's time to train our kids. Well, I said, okay. I said, actually, I've been developing a program for rural Navajo schools that don't have a cop for 2 hours. I said they wanted to train their staff, their kids, their high school staff. I've been working on a program, working the bugs out, getting the timing right. You know, I said, I think it's ready for mainstream. So let's give it a go. Because he just said, hey, you know what? These young kids, they're high schoolers. They got separated from their teachers, you know, and a lot of them got shot through windows and froze, got shot at. 5 minutes later, didn't move, got shot at some more. So that's kind of how this program came to Wyoming, was when a longtime superintendent said, you know, you've been up here for 10 years doing our staff. If there's one crazy guy that would be ahead of the curve, it'd be you. I said, I do. I have a program. I said, let me work out the bugs. We'll do it next fall. And there we were. Fall of 2019, you know, that fall after Parkland, we were doing that school district, the K-12 program. Now we have, this year, we have three more school districts coming on board. Glen Rock, Carbon County, two, Wheatland area, and possibly some more. But we got about 13 school districts on board in Wyoming. We had a lot of momentum before COVID. The world shut down, and schools didn't want to talk to me. You guys need to give Chromebooks and internet to rural Wyoming. And no one was worried about their schools being, you know, attacked because, again, we're trying to keep people safe and healthy. So we're starting to get that momentum back, and it's spreading like wildfire because it just makes sense. I like the high school stuff because, you know what, here in Wyoming, you trust them with an F-350 down I-80 at 15, pulling a horse trailer. Legally, they can do that. But yet, you don't want to give them some decisions inside of school. They got a, you know, 15,000-pound deadly weapon, and they're flying down I-80. But God forbid we give this kid some options. So if they're not always, because, you know, in high school, they're autonomous, right? They're not supervised all the time. They move around. They have off hours. They're studying together. You know, they're not always by a teacher. Hey, get in here. Hey, come down here. You know, so we need to help them make good decisions. And it's preparing them for college and the workplace. So when they leave here, they go to University of Wyoming, they go work at, you know, whatever, Walmart, they go work at an oil and gas company in Denver, Black Hills Energy, I don't know. Now they're out there without you guys and people. If their employer doesn't give it to them, they should, but it always comes down to money, right? It's not required. Typically, we don't do it. So it helps them have a little bit of life skills I hope they never need. But they're more than capable of helping out. So that's kind of the nuts and bolts. The high school is, they're autonomous. They try to take a teacher lead, but if there's no teacher, they make their own decisions, right? And if I have time, I'll fire up the Parkland animation and tell you why that about 18 of those kids that were killed, at least about 12 of them would be alive had they had a fraction of this training. And it's called the timeline of death. It's the forensic evidence of where what kid was shot and where on that three-level high school. And it's really unfortunate. Had those kids just gotten probably an hour of what we give them, I'll show you after I teach you this stuff, it'll be like, you know what? Probably some of those kids would have lived, right? But they lost their quarterback because they rely heavily on the teachers to snap them out of it. So that's the program. Does anybody have any questions? I know that was quick. You don't look like you're old enough to have a high schooler, so.
Yeah, I'm going to say maybe. No, the sixth grade, so are you doing the same thing for sixth through eighth grade, and is it same thing the eighth graders had last year?
Yes. Yep, sixth through eighth. Yep, and sometimes we include sixth graders. Sometimes it's only seventh and eighth because sixth grade they can do the takedown with the teacher if they choose to do so. I do it up here in Wyoming because I feel like your kids are about 2 years more mature. You know, you usually have smaller classroom sizes. You guys make them help around the house. I'm telling you, when we come up here, these kids are sharp. They're about a year or two ahead from city kids, and my guys see that all the time. They're like, wow, they're so blown away what a fourth grader will talk to them about. You know, we go down in town to a big city, and you know, it's a sixth grade, and you're like, man, I love Wyoming. Good people, right? And common sense.
So the video you showed last year, my wife came to this last year, so there's a video of the lasers on the kids, and that's when they're been shot. That's the same video.
Yeah, I think so. I'll probably show that later. I don't have it on this slide, but it's the you know, the Parkland animation where it just shows by the second where everybody was shot, staff members, kids, and how he moved around the building. Yep. Because he pulled the fire alarm, right? So the majority of that three-story high school got evacuated, and all the staff got out. Some of the kids, though, for whatever reason, got stuck on the first floor and the third floor, right? So they lost that quarterback. So he came back in the school, and a lot of kids stared at locked doors. They were never told to evacuate. They're trying to get back somewhere to lock down, but when they pulled the fire alarm, you know, the magnets go, and they're pre-locked for safety. So if that closes, I can't get in there without a key. So there's a lot of kids that also had half windows, right, in the rooms. And usually they, at the bare minimum, they've all known this, right? Shut the lights off, lock the door, hide over here so you can't be seen by that window. He shot at kids through that window several times that without the teacher saying, get over here, guys, get over here. They froze, you know, because they're hearing the boom of the shock, you know, the AR out in the hall. They got shot at multiple times because he has a little bit of video game skills. He's using angles, right? Sees them right in the window, engages them. He goes down the hall, comes back a minute later. Those kids aren't even injured. They don't move. Then they shoot them again because they didn't have anybody snap them out of it. Hey, you were just shot at. You know, they're completely frozen. It's like you think that would, some people would move, but they were so frozen that they couldn't think, right? Because they lost their quarterback. Hey, over here, guys. Get away from the window. Over here. So it's pretty powerful. And then the third level, they were all stuck in the hall. And there's like 16 of them that are just for 4 minutes trying to get into this room, but they're never shown evacuation. Hey, if one option ain't available, then get out. They had the two stairwells on each side. You know, think of long hallways like this high school, stairwells on each side. They definitely could be evacuated without him being seen. But they stayed up on that third level and just, they tried to run them, it was too late, and they just got shot. But the contagion sets in. You know, one person stares at a door, you're hugging in there, I feel comfortable. I was never shown evacuation. I was always taught I got to get in this room. They didn't find the extra option. So it's pretty crazy. I'll show that at the end, okay?
I've seen some research indicating that one of the best strategies, supposedly, is to equip and train faculty and staff with weapons. Is that something that you all do or the school district considers or does?
Here's the deal. We do that training in Colorado, right? Colorado is crazy. Has had it for 12 years, and they haven't taken it away from us yet. They're legislators. We've kind of went another direction, right? For gun control, we've got magazine restrictions. We've got all this other stuff. But what they haven't done is taken away the armed faculty option. Now, instead of Colorado, they have to have 24 hours, 16 hours of handgun training and 8 hours of active shooter. We do 40 hours in our version, right? Because we're approved by the state to teach it and by the insurance companies, right, as a vendor. So I think it's super effective. That's for, you know, you guys decide as a community, and the state of Wyoming did pass that, but it's been hung up in court, okay, because Gillette was trying to do it. They were the biggest school district. Kirby up there did their safety guy for years. He was a retired cop. They were going to arm about 26 staff members right off the bat, but that's hit a little – it's hung up in the court somewhere. But technically in Wyoming, it was passed, but somebody's challenging that. So I'm telling you what.
It's not been challenged.
Multiple times, right?
It went all the way to the Supreme Court. So,
yeah.
To answer your question, no, in Johnson County we don't have armed employees, but however we are doing these trainings, so he'll talk about the wheel and talk about some different things of what that looks like. But also we've been told that some of these districts will no longer be insured if they have trained staff with arms, so it's not just a federal thing. Insurance companies are not wanting to take the risk.
Yep.
So they are actually said they will not insure you as a district if you do that. So there's a lot of politics behind that.
Oh, yeah.
But however, what we're talking about here tonight, and we'll let Joe get into his triangle and some different things.
Because I can have that conversation be off the books. I got an hour. That can go a lot of ways, you know. Yeah, so, and it is. Like, that's why we're on that approved vendor list for the insurance companies, because there's only a couple in Colorado, Hub International, some other big ones, but if they don't do business in the state of Wyoming, it's not like I can say, well, hey, you're looking into it, Hub International, whatever, they do this, they will insure you if you have armed staff, but you have to come to somebody like us. There's a lot of red tape, see, and that's not an easy overnight fix. So what I tell people, whether it's more technology, whether it's bullet-resistant glass up front, more security, those things take dollars and money, right? If I'm going to outfit every school with ballistic-resistant glass that costs, you know, $50 a square foot, and I got all these beautiful vestibules up front, that's going to take, you know, $1 million for maybe a high school, right? By the time I do all that fun stuff up front, add more cameras, we could come in for a fraction of the price, right, while we're trying to get more funding and harden facilities or maybe, you know, hire more security staff, whatever it is. When we leave 5 days later, regardless of their role there, everybody has a little bit of a plan, right? So that for a fraction of the price, when we're still working out all this other stuff, everybody has a little bit of knowledge that can go a long way, right? And a little bit of confidence. So that's kind of the theory behind this, right? So, I'll give you my card, and you can ask me whatever question you want. Okay. So anything else on that?
I was going to make a point.
Yep.
You said it earlier, later in life it will help them too.
Yeah.
I mean, they get in a situation in the mall.
Right.
or you know, someplace that doesn't have bulletproof glass.
Right.
I mean, and they can save other people's lives.
Yeah, and that's what I like about it. I hope they never have to use it. It's like CPR, AED, trauma care. You know, it's a life skill if you're a hunter, a camper. You know, you go up on a bad accident, roll over, crash. You know, a little bit of medical skills might help you save somebody while they're waiting for the paramedics to arrive. So I explained to them that. I go, I hope you never have to use this, but 35 years from now when you got your own kids and you're in the Walmart or you're at seeing a movie or even a church or whatever, now these festivals, these outdoor events, and something pops off, you'll do one thing we taught you 20 years ago, and hopefully that helps you just remove you, your family from that, right? So we're not trying to be Rambo, not trying to get them to do unsafe things. It's kind of the exact opposite of just staying calm. Okay, what are my options and why? Don't make any hasty decisions, you know, and try to do the best you can just to make good decisions in the first 20 seconds. So, you know, I hope they never have to use it, but, you know, unfortunately, can you imagine 20 years from now? We're not going to solve this problem. I don't want to go down a rabbit hole, but, you know, look how prevalent they are since Columbine. In the last 6-7 years, the shock and awe, 20 years from now, they're going to be all over the place. And we're still going to have the same conversation about mental health, gun control, what's the issues. It's obviously not an easy problem. We would have fixed it. You know what I mean? So it's sad, but, you know, it's their post-Columbine kids. Every generation from now on is going to have to deal with this. You know, I just came in today. Did you guys notice the visual board that some kid did as a project about Columbine? So you walk up front, and there's Harrison Klebold. I'm like, wow, I should get to talk to that kid. Be like, hey, do you want to talk to the guy that you have there? He has a picture, I think, Grant, one of the SWAT guys. That's my old brother-in-law. But kids still talk about it, right? That was a high school project. Weird. I mean, it's not, it's like it used to be going postal, but it's just, you know, 20 years from now, it's going to be kind of crazy, right? It's unfortunate. Okay, so let's get into this just a little bit. Yeah, bestie up there. Those of you, the two guys are out with me. I give them, they work their butt off all day today, training 300, you know, 150 staff with no, so I went to the gym for an hour. I just put on some more deodorant, and here I am. So, but those two other guys are with me training all your kids this week, right? I want to make them work 25 hours a day, right? But I will.
Yeah.
So that's good.
So when you know what to do, here's kind of during a mass shooting situation like those we saw this weekend, Jamie is joining us with more on what we all need to know. And these guys are really interesting.
Yeah, they train people on how to get themselves out of a situation like this alive, so I want to introduce you to Joe Dedon and Brian Pollard. They are with Attack Web Consulting. And Joe, you're standing next to some options right here that we would have.
Yeah, so hope you guys can read my top scratch, right? So all these shootings are very dynamic. They're happening in different venues now, indoors, outdoors, and they're getting extremely complicated. So it's important not have a predetermined step of response, but a wheel, right? So evacuate, barricade, fight. You look at the wheel here, you've got to pick and choose which one's appropriate for that exact moment, right? Because, again, they're moving, they're indoors, outdoors, different structures, different venues. Some of these options may or may not be available. You got to choose the best one.
You had some training that you did this weekend. Who are you training, and you want to show this video?
Yeah, it was hospital staff in Northern Arizona, with about 400 employees. So if you look at this right here, right, you've got a gentleman here using our quick peaks and angles, right, position advantage. You know, there was an option for him to retreat. You just start that attack from an ambush point is what we want to call it. So very close, quick, not a lot of time for the shooter to react. But right there, he was stuck in a long hallway. The only option right there was to fight and defend himself, right? So
that's what he did. And Ryan, you train all sorts of folks, from the cops to the kids.
Right.
Tell me about that.
Well, we tailor the program based on the need of the student, right? And so cops are a different dynamic. You know, we've got a specific mindset that they're already under that we're trying to build into them, and they've got one topic. But this program for kids, we tailor it from the young ones to the big ones, and we try to make it as realistic as possible but also not traumatize the kids. So we got...
Yeah, and it's life skills, you know. So as the younger kids go and they get into high school and they go out to the workplace or college, we're providing something they may be able to use later on in life, not just in their schools, but... from there, unsupervised, without that adult, that protector, be able to give them those responses so that they can quickly make a safe decision and remove themselves into their situation.
Well, thank you, gentlemen. So
thank
today
you.
On our to-do list, we're going to assess our situation when we go to work or school and think about where our exits are, what we would do, and have a plan. That's you.
There you go. Can never be fast enough. All right, so what is the wheel? Without the cop scratch, there's the nice version. What's the question mark in the middle? Which one? Right, that's you. That's your situation. I can't tell you you need to start, you know, run, hide, fight, like the federal government, run, hide, fight, run, hide, fight. We don't like a violent society, and the government's not going to tell you to fight, because now you fight. Instead of getting $10 million, you're a VA employee. You die fighting, you know, federal government gave you that. Now she gets $20 million instead of $5. But anyway, you may have to fight right off the bat, right? Okay, I might have to go to evacuate. I might have to go to barricade. So I can't tell you where to start. You've got to make that decision based on who's with you, where you're at, what's taking place around you, right? But what's the most important part about that? Not only can you pick and choose, the multi-directional arrows are huge, especially for rural community and limited law enforcement and no armed staff. These events can take place very long, even in town now. They're all about an hour, hour and a half in length, even in town. So, you know, in supermarkets, like, okay, how do you hide from the cops for an hour and 21 minutes? The cops aren't being real aggressive. We're going to show you that. Boulder, Colorado, we're supposed to be good at it, right? March 2021, 10 people dead, including a cop. My brother's SWAT team found alive an hour and 21 minutes later. A little bit too long for me. There's 100 cops in there, but they're not real aggressive once one of their guys go down. So anyway, it's the multi-directional arrows. What does that imply? Especially in a longer event, you know?
Scenario changes throughout the country. Like you said, the kids that could have went downstairs, maybe at one point they couldn't have, and then he goes back downstairs, now you got your chance.
Yeah, you know, maybe right now getting out of sight and trying to get back to a barricade made sense, you know? But as time goes on, okay, now can I get out, right? Or I had to go and barricade. It's all good. You know, I barricaded the door, and then 20, 30 minutes into it, I realized, oh, if I go out back this teacher work area through the shop, I can get out, you know, evacuate my kids into the sticks, the river bottom. I don't care where you go. Just get outside of the building. Maybe it's available now. So, but as time goes on, but if I'm good, I got a perfectly good barricaded door, this place ain't on fire, then maybe we stay, right? But as time goes on, step back. Start one way or another. So, yeah, got to be flexible, all right? Whether it's 5 seconds later, 10 minutes later, 20 minutes later. So, how about the what's important now? That's the big one. We'll talk a little bit how, especially adults, we're going to talk shortly about Uvalde, but it goes into any type of group response, even for adults and kids. But, you know, everybody here at the school plays a role. And we got to look at the psychology behind that as how good, trained, educated people still last April had a massive failure, right? I could throw all the training out in the world, but if we don't address kind of why we need to practice and how people function under stress, then really good, educated, trained people will still make very bad decisions, right? And until we understand the different factors that take place, we're going to keep throwing all this training at people, keep saying, cops, why are you doing this? And it's keep happening, right? So we'll get into that and get ahead of myself. But it goes back to none of those cops in that hall stood back, whether it was 5 minutes into it, 2 hours, you know, hour into it, four shields later, 64 cops later, whatever it was. No one stepped back and said, okay, I know I'm an extra coach, but why are we still standing here? Those kids needed them in that room a lot quicker. So I don't get ahead of myself, but stepping back, what's important now? Reevaluating, breathing, you know, not getting hyper-focused down one response and forgetting about what's going on around me, and then reevaluating it and doing whatever I need to do. Okay, so that's how good people in long events, all of a sudden it's a snowflake, snowball, and avalanche. No one steps back and resets, and they just got hit by an avalanche, and they didn't realize it was happening. Okay, so go ahead. So here's the second piece. I want you to pay attention to the winning mindset, the what's important now. This is what we go over with the high school kids and your staff, right? And then the OODA loop. Right, so you'll see the introduction of the quick peaks and angles. Right, I'll be in a cubicle looking for, you know, my nearest exit or danger. I'll find the exit. But listen to the what's important now by BP up front, just kind of that winning mindset, and then also at the end the OODA loop. That's the decision making process your brain has to make. We're not computers, right? We're not cameras. So under complete stress, we've got to observe something, orient ourselves to that observation. What is it? And I got to decide to do whatever, and I got to act on that decision. People get stuck usually on the first two O's, right? So this kind of a BP explains it really well, but the nuts and bolts of our program is right here.
There are some steps you can take to give yourself the best chance of survival. So Jamie joining us now with more on what to do in an emergency if there is an active shooter situation. Good morning, Jamie.
And good morning to you. So I want everyone to think about their workplace today when you go to school today and assess your surroundings. A lot of us work in a situation like this, long, narrow queue. So how are you going to get out and get to safety should danger arise? I have Brian Pollard and Joe Dedon with me from TAC-1 Consulting, and they do active shooter training. Brian, tell me what happens to the brain when that kind of danger comes at you.
Yeah, the body and brain, under that level of stress and that type of scenario, it's pre-wired for freeze, flight, fight. The problem is, for most people, they can't get past the freeze part. But we can change that. We can play a different tape in our internal DVR, if you will, by creating some training, right? So we have a plan. We do some physical training that involves drills, like we teach our people. And we really have to have a survivalist mindset, right? I'm going to survive, and that survivalist mindset is based on an acronym, WIN. What's important now? What can I do to make it better?
And Joe, this is what we're going to think about today. You're in your queue today, this morning. So what are you going to do should a danger come our way?
Okay, so best option in one of our in our program is to evacuate, right? If I'm no longer here, I can get myself out, remove myself from the situation, and that's safe. So what I want to do is I'm going to take a couple seconds to analyze the situation, right? Do what we call quick peeks and angles. So I'm going to try to look left and right, right? I'm looking for danger first, but that could be shell casings, could be the shooter, could be people running at me. Indicators of violence, right? I don't want to go that way. I don't see any of that, so I'm going to move. I'm going to identify my exit. It's down here on the right. So as I'm coming here, I can see the hall, right? But before I commit to that, I need to go left. So I'm going to look at the corner of that drywall, and I'm clearing that hall as I go down. So 90%, okay, it looks safe. It looks good. Now I have to make sure I look right, because it could be behind me. They're not. I keep moving. Again, doorway's on the right. I'm going to swing left. I'm going to come real wide like geometry, right? It's all about angles. I'm clearing that hall before I get to it to make sure that my exit is still safe, not to run into danger, the shooter, things like that. Moving out here, I need to go left to get to the fire exit. I see it. Now, as I come here, I'm looking at, again, the corner of the drywall, looking from the floor up. Okay, now I see shell casings, magazines. Indicators of violence and danger, I don't need to go that way. That's no longer an option. I need to go back the way I came from as fast as I can, or I need to get, you know, potentially get ready to defend myself, come close to the shooter. So it's a calculated evacuation using quick peaks and angles and just taking a few moments to remove myself safely and not make hasty decisions. So
you guys really want us to take a moment and think before we run, and we want to load up our mental DVR with a couple of scenarios so that we can just hit play.
Absolutely. That's the only way it's going to happen. Your OODA loop is engaged. In order for that process to happen, it's got to go through the cycle. Observe, orient, decide, and act. We want to manipulate that time and space between orientation and the decision phase.
All right. It's sad we have to talk about this, but we have to have a plan. We have to be prepared. What would we do? How would we get out and play that out? Walk it out today when you go into work or school. Back to you.
Great information.
Yeah. Thank you, Dan. Awesome steps you can take.
Right. Now, and that's a kind of a different part of our program, right, is the run. Whether I take the FEMA version, Homeland Security, Run, Hide, Fight, I take ALICE, ALERT, whatever, some craze, they all have acronyms. Everybody does the fun takedowns. Everybody barricades doors, right, because that's fun, and we put on TikTok, I can make an Instagram promo video. But no one covers the run, right? They're like, well, just get out, duh, get out. Well, if I'm on the first floor of this high school and I have an exterior exit back towards the ag building, my run is going to look a lot different than the teacher on the second floor that's deep into this facility that has to go down a stairwell and out to the nearest exit. And it's probably the most unsafe thing I'll ever tell somebody to do, you know, move from point A to point B. But no one goes over it. They're like, well, yeah, just get out. Okay. I'll show you cops who run, try to get out, staff who try to do things, and it's the last steps they take in their life. They're running out of their shoes, no plan, and they get shot right in the face, so they should have stayed in the car. So it's so obvious, it's right under their noses, but they don't practice it. You know, we'll go to other programs, and they're like, we'll be doing ALICE for 5 years. I'm like, okay, what's the E? Evacuate. Okay, well, show me how you evacuate up here, teacher. You know, well, they didn't show us that in our class. I'm like, I know, it's the most dangerous. I know you're not a barricaded door. It takes me 5 minutes to show you how to barricade a door. You know, it takes me a couple things on the map. But moving through a commercial building like this without a bunch of people is the most unsafe thing I'll ever tell you to do. But no one practices it. So we spend a lot of time on the evacuation route. One, it's not always to get out. It's just, okay, I'm in the bathroom. The high school kids, you don't have locks on the bathrooms. Don't stay in there, right? But I might need to come out, do a quick peek, bounce back over to the science hall so I can get into a room or find another exit. But I sure don't want to stay in the bathroom. It's one way in, one way out. I'm not going to get stuck in there because if it comes in the bathroom, I'm done. So it's the most overlooked part because people think it's easy, but it's probably the most, you know,
dangerous part, but if we can slow down, human eye catches movement, right? So if I'm not running out of my shoes, slamming doors, you most likely won't see me unless I'm looking right at you. And if you think of the shooter with the tunnel vision, the time dilation, they're going through the same physiological stress we would be. So that's how these people get shot, right? The shooter slamming these doors to come back and help, like staff members, you know, come back and help their kids. They got that protector movement. They come slamming these double doors, gunman's face this way, turns around, you know, with a rifle barrel or a pistol at 90 yards, sprays and prays. That staff member's done. And they're like, well, how did you hit at 80 yards with a handgun? That's because I moved my barrel 6 inches, whether I'm slapping or not. I got a Glock 17. One of those rounds is going to hit you because you just completely run in here, slam these doors, and I turned around, dunzo. Cops do it all the time, too. There's lots of videos. It's, you see it, right? So we spend a lot of time in the evacuations. It's not always the fun, coolest thing, you know, to put, and everyone wants to tackle me, everyone wants to do this, everyone wants to barricade a door. That's easy. We focus on these skills because, you know, it's important. Anyway, we'll get to that. I'll show you guys what I mean on that.
Okay? So this is a letter written to the sheriff in Platte Canyon, so Sheriff Meek. So this is a second school shooting. But this is realistic questions, right? Going through your head. It says, yesterday I was driving across Camp Carroll on my way to pick up my daughters at Front Range Christian School when a sheriff's SUV came up fast behind me with blue and red lights flashing. At Kipling, there are more of your vehicles, though headed north, fast. I thought, boy, heck of an accident. Of course, your officers were actually responding to Deer Creek shooting today. I was thinking about what might have been in your deputies' minds as they were responding, maybe. I was trained to handle school shootings, but do I remember that? I was trained to handle school shootings, but was the situation I'm responding to covered? We can't cover everything, right? And will I make mistakes? Am I going to get hurt or killed? Your job's an incredible thing, you know, whatever. Thank you for doing what you do. Must have been a cop, a retired fireman, or a soldier who wrote that, because usually they don't write nice letters like that. But those are all legitimate, right? Will they remember anything? Staff members, get it 6 years from now. We're all human. We're going to have fear, right? Yeah, this is. I can't prep you for this. I can't come in here and traumatize everybody, or definitely not coming back, right? So, you know, but we can try to get you there the best we can, but we can't prep you for that kind of an event, right? So, those are legitimate questions, right? Anyway, just things to think about as we watch this next video. Okay. This is Uvalde Hallway. Okay, for those of you who've been maybe not listening to the news for a while, you're in this hallway. Okay, those are the first couple of cops that went in there talking about the incident. They haven't been barricaded. He wasn't barricaded in the room. They're running from it. Okay. To me, they're frozen. See those cops, how they stacked there? 42 minutes, hour 51 minutes. To me, they're frozen. Okay? When we think of frozen, we think of this. But from all the training since post-Columbine, 23 years later, whether I'm a federal cop with an unlimited budget, Border Tackle, they have their own National Geographic show, or a small town PD, or Texas DPS, you know, the Walker Texas Ranger guys. To me, they're frozen. We needed them in that classroom the minute it started, okay? So let's talk about why those 19 cops from all different agencies, from 30-year vets to 2-year cops, stood in that hallway for so long, after having about 12 times to reset. And just I'm telling you, it's going to be a $1 billion lawsuit. About $50 million per kid. It is so bad, they had about 8 times to basically train what we've been doing for years and years, no matter where you work, that they failed to reset. So it's going to send a message, and it's going to be heavy. And you're going to be like, wow, that guy was right. It was $1 billion total. It's going to be massive, people. Okay. But why did that happen to 19 cops who don't do it for the glory? They do it because they love people. They help people just like other government employees. We don't get paid a lot of money. We do it because we naturally want to help our, you know, community. So how did all those guys fail? What are some factors you got? How do good educated adults fail? After what, billions of dollars thrown at law enforcement and training, as you know, since Columbine? So how did they fail? What are some factors? There's a lot. It's not easy. It's a spider web, okay? It's a spider web, and it all adds up. What's the number one thing we always hear? The chief, no leadership. Yeah. There we go. No leadership. So we have leadership. Like that's actual rank, like sergeant, the paramilitary. We actually have titles, leadership that's titles, right? I don't really usually question a chief if I'm a brand new patrol officer, okay? Now we have implied leadership. So let's say I'm a 25-year street cop, not a sergeant, but I'm a two-year cop.
her and I are peers, pay level, things like that. I hope you're not pay level. Some states I would be making just as much as you and you've been her 30 years. But she's not my supervisor, but do I look up to her naturally as a new rookie cop? Or if I'm a brand new RN out of college, you know, and I got a BSN of 30 years working in the ER? Yeah, so sometimes I follow the lead of my coworker because I respect them and they have more time on the job. So naturally, I follow other people who may not my supervisor. We're direct peers in the pecking order, but I follow her lead because of her experience, right? So sometimes you get informal leadership. What else do you get in groups? Just general straight-up contagion. You're doing something, so I'll do it, okay? So we just get, and it's strength in numbers. We go back to our pack mentality or animal mentality. I feel strong with two people, four people, ten. And just because you're standing here, I just feel safe standing next to him. Could be doing something wrong, but now I feel a little better because I got bestie here. Okay? Bestie. You know, high school kids know what bestie is. You guys know. She's your bestie. Right? She is. And you love her and you guys are best friends. Okay? So it's sometimes contagion. How about just fear? The biggest call of their lives. We can't put them in that where they're hearing young kids scream. You know, it's shock and awe where it's heavy, heavy weapons. Right? You can go to domestics, rollover accidents. Nothing will prepare you for hearing those screams, smelling it. And okay, I walk through this door and this guy has a 30-round mag. I got a 9mm on, a pistol. Well, I'm sure they had the rifles out. They did. So just fear, right? The biggest call of their life. So contagion, leadership. How about other agencies? If you had a shooting here, you would have Montana State Troopers here. You would. You're that close. They'll come. We had Cheyenne. Cheyenne PD came all the way down to South Jeffco and Columbine. 2 hours running code. That's how far they came from. So, heck, I'm not even in my state. I was bringing my kid to a wrestling tournament. I heard that Buffalo PD had a shooting. I got my work stuff in my car. Small community, we help each other out. I show up, I'm off duty. I'm not even in the state of Wyoming. I'm a Montana Highway Patrol officer. I get in there, okay, here's Buffalo PD, Montana Highway Patrol, and let's say Johnson County deputy behind me, okay? Hey, man, where do you need me? Well, hey, we're going to go to this room. And I'm thinking you're Buffalo PD chief. I saw him walk by. He's coming up with a plan. I start getting focused on what's important to me. Okay, hey, you're going to be the first one through the door. I'm going to open the door for you. Okay, so you're going to go left. I'm going to go right. Hey, bestie back here in Johnson County, you're going to go straight down the middle. So now I start getting focused. Hey, is your flashlight on? Is your EO tech on? If it's dark out, everybody's got their weapons charged. We get focused on our role. Our role is super important. I need to get through this door. I can't let bestie over here. When he goes left, I need to be right through that door like training, right off his shoulder so I can cover that deep corner. And I can't stall because I got Johnson County coming down the middle. That's how we would overwhelm a room, right, if we're going to be outgunned and get in there, right? And I'm thinking, wow, Joe, don't get hit. If you get hit, keep pushing because there's 16 more coming. And if it takes 17, somebody's going to get them. But if I stay in the door, we all can't get in here and overwhelm this 18-year-old kid. So we get focused on our role. Okay, I'm just an extra coach, put me in. Hey, coach, I'm ready to rock. Somebody's going to tell us to go any minute. Okay? So we get focused right here. And in that stress, too, of that OODA loop, right, the highest stress, we start switching from the frontal lobe of our brain now, the advanced brain, right? That's why we have our own language, why we invent electricity. Okay? So when people freeze, they go back to that animal brain immediately, and they just freeze. They have no responses through training, through prior dangerous, encounters, because we're not like regular animals, right? We're supposed to be civilized. So we diminish those survival skills. Talking about primitive man, right? So I start getting watered down just enough to where I'm not as clear and I'm not as sharp. 10 minutes into it, 5 minutes, hour and 20, where it's just enough to water me down to where I get hyper-focused on my job. I think I'm being useful. Anytime somebody, coach, is going to put us in, hey, I heard we're waiting for shields. We've got 3 shields. Hey, I heard we're working on breaching tools. No, we got a key from a staff member. We don't have to use breaching tools. We can use an old-fashioned key. No one steps out of it and says, what's important now? Hey, guys, I know we were waiting on a shield. We got 4 of them. You know that shield wouldn't stop the rifle rounds. So there's another big lawsuit, right? I knew it. When I heard they're waiting on shields, I'm like, these podunk cops don't know that those shields wouldn't stop the rifle they're up against. It would have cut through like butter, but they waited for several minutes for pistol-rated shields. They're up against the rifle. Sad thing is, those rifle plates and their heavy vests would have stopped it. So I'm telling you, these lawsuits are massive. That's one thing. And then the teacher propped the door open. But then, before he got into the school, 100 rounds from the outside, those couple cops that you see running, One of them had him in his sights at 62 yards. He got on the radio, asked for permission from high up to shoot him in the back. He said no before any kid was killed. I'm telling you, then there's like 12 more. I'm telling you, that's why it's going to be a billion-dollar lawsuit. Okay. Also, muscle memory. We talk about that, right? Athletes prepping for a job interview. We try to memorize some things so under the stress of the moment where I got to quickly react in sports, I can outmaneuver you, whatever. We get good at things we can control because we can't control the moment, right? So in the cop world, if we're we all get good at standing next to each other. Where I'm a narcotics officer, a homicide detective. You guys watch on TV when they serve search warrants, and they're at the door like this, and then the next one comes right next to them. Sometimes it's muscle memory. I feel good standing next to you. Got the fight on. Joe, don't get hit. Yes, it's loaded. So you see all those different things. Leadership, not my state. I'm just an extra. Someone else is coming up with a plan. Any minute, they're going to send us in there. Okay, Joe, when they send us in there, don't hesitate. Get through the door. Focus on the front sight. And then all of a sudden, they step back, and their train derailed. So snowflake, snowball to an avalanche. All those different factors. No one stepped out of it. Said, what's important now? Hey, guys, I'm only a Montana Highway Patrol 2 years, but since day one in the academy, I was taught to go in by myself. We got 18. What are we still standing here? Hey, chief, I don't care. I'm still a cop in the state of Montana. I can still carry a gun. Anybody else want to go in there with me? Not one of those cops stepped out of it. Okay? And they actually physically arrested one in handcuffs and disarmed him. Wait till you hear that one. That comes straight from the law enforcement community. I had to read this article 3 times, check the website to make sure it wasn't a fake URL. It's officer.com. The first Border Patrol guy got there, the contagion was so bad, they physically cuffed him like they would a suspect, disarmed him because he wanted to go in that room, and kicked him out of the school. Wait until the public hears that. How do 19 cops talk him into arresting one? That tells you the contagion, the groupthink was so bad that all those cops bought off on it. Wait until you see that video. That's why we haven't seen all these cameras. Remember, day one, they said there's cameras everywhere in the school. The lawsuits are so heavy that they're just, well, one day we'll see them, but it's terrible, okay? So just think about that. Good people get watered down. You know, all those factors, just enough rules, policy, procedure, you know? Oh, I can't do that. I wasn't trained. That's against policy. So that's just a small piece. That's the only thing I could really kind of allude it to. Where people kind of understand is all those different things adding up to where those cops are hyper-focused on their role. They don't see the bigger picture because they don't step back and they get, and all of a sudden it hit them like a derailed train and they're like, wow, how'd that just happen? Well, it's a slow drip, right? And it got out of hand. No one stopped it. So anyway, so many different factors, obviously not one single factor, but all those things adding up to make good people under extreme, extreme stress make a bad decision, okay? It's natural, okay? And we got to understand it will happen to some people right away. It'll be a slow buildup of that stress over time to where we're watered down just enough. We're not using this. We're going back to things we know. I follow command. I follow sitting in here next to you. I know how to enter a room. I've done that. I'm good to go. I'm going in autopilot at that point. But I'm not stepping back and solving critical problems, okay? All right, moving on. See how we got an hour? I could talk about this for all day. Actually, this week I'm talking about it for 48 hours. Just different versions. Last week I talked
about it. Hey guys, I don't know what's going on. I'm a geek super prison.
I'll tell you what this is first.
Hey guys, I don't know what's going on. I'm a geek super prison.
Okay, it's offensive. There are F words in here. I don't show this to the kids. I show it to staff today. I gave the disclaimer. It's offensive, and there's dead bodies. They're not up close, okay? But this is an example of the Frozen, where we talk about muscle memory. Okay, this is a police blogger. Okay, he has a scanner in his car. So he hears the 911 call. The King Super is in Boulder, Colorado by CU Boulder, March of 2021, right? This is the first supermarket shooting. Now we've had like 6 of them post-COVID. So he's the first person on scene that wasn't shot at. I've never seen this captured on video. We always talk about don't freeze, you know, martial arts class, stranger danger, whatever it is. Well, just don't freeze, run, bite, scratch, whatever. This is the Frozen part, okay? I think it's safe to say once we watch this, this is like a chicken with its head cut off. The body's moving, but there's nothing up top driving that, right? Like a snake, it'll move around, but there's nothing up here. What does a greeter do? A good one at your supermarket or Walmart or King Supers, Kroger, whatever you guys have up y'all. What does a greeter do? Safeway. You got Safeway still? Safeway. Walmart? Okay, what does a greeter do at Walmart if they're good at their job, people? Hi, welcome to Walmart. Here's your cart. And then maybe during COVID, put on your mask and then wipe this off. Then, when I'm bored, like everybody else, what do? Whether I'm 9 or 70, I get on my phone. We're addicted to technology. I click on it. Hi, welcome to Walmart. Here's your cart. Ooh, check the game. Ooh, Buffalo Bills winning. Nice. Hi, welcome to Walmart. Here's your cart. Okay. In a busy metro area, King Supers, on a Friday payday, how many times do you think that greeter does that process? What, 300 times from 5 to 7? And people are getting off work, running, grabbing groceries? Yeah. So we talk about muscle memory. Sometimes there's bad muscle memory. Okay? Watch this. This will blow your mind. So pay attention to the greeter. It's raw. Okay? I wouldn't show this to you if it wasn't training gold. I'm not here to stress anybody out. I'm not here to offend anybody with the language, but it's powerful. Okay? Go ahead and hit it. Never see this captured on video. Unfortunately.
So, hold on. I heard gunshots. They were very close. Someone's down right here.
Someone's to the left.
Someone's down. I'm sure 911. Can you see which way the shooter went?
No.
Look, there's people lying in the fucking street, guys. We need 911 here now. We're at King Supers in South Boulder. Table Mesa. We've got injured parties on the ground. 911 now, people. We don't know if there's a shooter, active shooter somewhere.
Yeah. Oh, this just started.
Could he be in the store?
Yeah.
He went in there.
He went in the store.
He's still there.
Oh, my God. Guys, we got people down inside King Supers. Look, there's... Holy shit. God damn it. I'm fucking getting away, guys.
Now he starts being helpful, he starts getting people away, because they still come up the shop. They find these people,
they
don't
shoot,
they don't know what's going on. This person pass out.
Get back!
So you hear the sirens. Hear it starting. Okay. Go ahead and fast forward a little bit for me, if you would. About 3 minute mark.
He's in the fucking store, guys.
That's good, right there. Okay. He starts to run all around the building. Different time, I just you know, fast forwarded him. So he's trying to help everybody stay away. He comes around the corner. Watch this. It's crazy. I mean, that's where you look at it like, what? Where
did
that happen? Okay. You hear the sirens? They're just about getting to the parking lot right now. Just about walking out. Still on his phone, just walking out.
Yep.
Okay. Now pay attention to the cops. That's why you don't run. They run out of their cop cars because they want to be a coward in the parking lot. They have no plan, don't have their guns out. First of all, Officer Talley, God rest his soul, gets shot right in the face.
In South Boulder.
Every other cop stops.
Table Mesa. He's inside
the
building right now.
We got to get him in there, you know, trying to get the cops in there. They go in there, no plan. No long rifles out. They're all issued.
He's inside.
Watch, you'll see him turn on the radio. We turn on a portable 100 times a day, and I want to talk to dispatch. That's my muscle memory, makes me feel comfortable. Okay. See him, just turn his radio on, no big deal, no gun out. Yeah, this is Denver metro area, we're supposed to be good at this. Okay? It's actually sad to watch.
We've got cops responding everywhere, they've got the whole parking lot surrounded. This guy was shooting, it sounded like a shotgun. It was big. This is no joke. Still shooting. Cops are shooting, probably.
Not the cops. They hide right here. They're done. Their co-worker, that tall guy, Officer Talley, God rest his soul. Go ahead and hit it. Got shot right in the head.
Guys, this is Boulder, Colorado.
It stopped that whole aggressive response. You can hear the radio traffic. I got a clip. I show the cops where it's we're in a gunfight. Hold the radio, and then it's we got an officer down. Shots fired. You can tell right in their voice, they're done. And they get on and say, it's not an AK, it's an AR. He's headed towards the back of the store. So they saw him. And they said, we got an officer down 30 feet in front of us. We can't get to him. What? You're my coworker. What do you do? Call the real cops and National Guard? They don't even have guns. If you're not going to get to me, you're not going to help that guy in the produce that just got shot and is bleeding out. My brother's SWAT team, Broomfield SWAT, found him an hour and 21 minutes later hiding. They had 100 cops there in 10 minutes. Their SWAT team is 35 minutes away down Highway 36. Jeffco was up there. My old coworker saw him milling around. There's not a lot of places to hide in a supermarket, right? It's a warehouse. Just the exit. You know, you got the freezers. You got the deli. You got your poopers up front. After that, the admin office, there's not a lot of places to hide. Those 100 cops just did that inner perimeter, stopped. They saw the carnage. They just had groceries, you know, Starbucks with the guy. Went to his barbecue, known him for 10 years. They didn't sign up for that. That observation, that OODA loop right there, was strong enough to take those cops and just take the fight out of them. They just stand there. So wait until that lawsuit comes out. That guy's still alive. I haven't heard a lot about it because he's got to go to trial. Wait until that gets out. With the medical, those guys bleeding out, every agency that was there is going to pay millions of dollars for those bleeding out people too. Right? They wouldn't go save their coworker. They're not going to save a stranger. We're taught to step over, you know, our own cop, right? Step over that body from day one. Cops are going to go down, step over them, go get the gunman, worry about people later. But if I'm still killing, I don't render aid, right? It's nuts, right? And that's Denver metro area, home of Columbine, massive police presence, massive training dollars. And we just did that, okay, a year and a half ago. So let's talk about the King Supers guy. We're laughing. I'm like, what? Okay, what part of the O? Observe, orient, decide, and act. Where did he get stuck on? The first one, the observation. The observation was so heinous, he either got shot at or saw someone. He never oriented himself to, this is a shooting, I should probably leave. He saw that, heard that, he's gone. He went back to his muscle memory. Hi, he even said hi. Is there a shooting here? Yeah, it's right in here. Right? So some people freeze like that, but it takes other stimulus, like another human coming up to you, right? Hey, is there a shooting here? Hey, guy, come back down to earth. Hey. And then he's like, yeah, right here. He's right on top of the guy. Now, how about the two gunshots? What, four minutes after he maybe got shot at? You know, okay. Oh, boom, boom. I'm not so stressed out now. Oh, let me run. Why am I still standing here? That didn't happen. And then he's like, man, there's a shooting. I'm getting the F out of here. And contagion? Usually someone running from you, sometimes contagion will set in and you just follow that person. That dude never became, he was vapor locked. His brain was going back to his muscle memory. The things he's done, hi, and plus, they don't make him like they used to. He has a good work ethic. It's 4, you know, he gets off at 6. Kind of a joke, not funny. But see how he's, I can't leave my post. And then we don't use this part of the brain, right? He's gone. He's like that snake with his head cut off. He's moving around, but there ain't anything good decision-wise going on. So we always talk about muscle memory. It could be bad. All right, so I'm going to show you the exact opposite. Here's a Waffle House hero. Okay, this happened between Parkland and Santa Fe, Texas. Okay, so Parkland was that deadly shooting, you know, on Valentine's Day, right, down there in Florida at the high school. This happened a couple weeks later. Then we had Santa Fe, Texas, where like 12 kids got shot. So it was one of those two big shootings again where, you know, everybody just keeps talking about it. Man, why are these kids, you know, why these schools keep getting shot up? So he only was on, like, Good Morning America for a couple days, but I feel like he kind of didn't get a lot of press because we were so worried about Parkland and Santa Fe. Like, he was just a blurb. He saved a lot of lives, okay? Only two people died. So think of a Waffle House late at night. Really small, narrow diner, all glass. Not a good place to be if somebody comes in the front door. Check out this guy's mindset, right? For one, his survival mindset. And then his decision-making process, and we'll break it down. He used to be an electrician, James Shaw. He used to be an electrician. Now he's worth $202 million. According to all his followers and his engagement on social media, they can do an algorithm. Good, he deserves every $201 million of it because he's a hero. But he was just an electrician before this. Okay? Pretty quick, sharp kid. Check this bad boy out.
Then the second one happened, and the third one happened. I think that's when the glass busted and broke through. And then I saw the Waffle House employees scat. Then I looked back, and I saw a person laying on the ground right at the entrance of the door. So then I jumped pretty much and slid from the tabletop to the entrance of the door. And I think he let off some shots. Through the glass. shot through that door, I'm pretty sure, and I'm pretty sure he grazed my arm. And it was at that time that I kind of made up my mind, because there's no way to lock that door, that if it was going to come down to it, he was going to have to work to kill me. So at the time that he was either reloading or the gun jammed or whatever happened is when I ran through the swivel door. I hit him with the swivel door, and then the gun was kind of jammed up and it was pushed down, so we were scuffling. And I managed to get him with one hand on the gun, and then I grabbed it from him and I threw it over the countertop. And then after that, I was trying to get out the door, and I think he was pretty much in the entranceway, so I just took him out with me, out of the
entrance,
and all the way outside. And then I proceeded to run.
And then can you back up to the wheel? Like, it's probably like 4 slides back or something. Moment to Buffalo. No, I mean the actual slide.
Oh, sorry.
Yeah, it's okay. It's your first day on the job. You know, do me a solid. You're a lot better than Rich, so, okay, keep going. Okay, keep going.
It's not cooperating.
That's okay. It's usually the case. Technology. Keep going. All right, one more. A couple more. Okay. Okay. Let's talk about the OODA loop first. What do you observe first? And it's natural. It's usually not, it's a backfire, it's something else, not a shooting. He observed what he thought was what?
Places.
Yeah, what made it real for him? So how did he get to orient that it was a shooting, not plates?
The third time.
Yep. Seeing the glass break and the first person go down. Ooh, not plates crashing, that's gunfire. Then he decides real quick to do what? The evacuation? To get out of his booth? You know, he can't get out of a booth very good and there's not a lot of place to hide, so he jumps over the counter. Okay, he was going to go barricade that door, but you can't lock it. So he says, well, I'm going to fight. Here's the reload, because the guy dumped a whole mag, you know, 30-round mag in, what, 10 seconds probably. Here's the reload, decides to fight him preemptively, because he heard it, you know, the mag drop, and it would come out and get him. He explains that, right? He's looking down. You could tell he was talking about, you know, coming out here, boom, and then I'm up ready. So he fights him. He evacuates, right? Naturally, want to get out. He takes him out with him and goes. He did the whole wheel, like, twice. See that difference between King Super's guy and this guy? Pretty crazy, right? And again, we got lucky with this guy. You know, just a young electrician. I was trying to see if like he was ROTC or maybe he was a cadet at the sheriff's office growing up, had some active shooter training, or was a government employee that got some run high fight. An electrician just luckily jumped into action, right? Pretty crazy. Okay, so I just wanted to show you those two videos. That's the complete difference between an unprepared person for whatever reason and somebody who is, we get lucky or has some training that can quickly think and make some good decisions and not freeze. Okay? So those are two different options, right? So anyway, it's about 6:30. We're supposed to be done, but I don't care. If you guys got 15, 20 minutes, I can go over some angles and some quick peeks, kick you out of here, but I'll show you why we teach this or whatever you guys want to work on. I don't care. I'm here until Friday. So, you know, we can, I mean, Charles has this unlimited card, you know, it's like called a P card. You know, some government employees, you know, you just order us pizza and do a few other things. And then, you know, we might have to submit some tickets over here, but no, just kidding. So, for you guys, I'm not in a hurry. So, any questions on that first? I think the biggest thing is maintain the program, okay? Because I'm going to kick you out of here in a minute, but I want to show you the evacuations and the angles. And we'll practice that so you can kind of learn. Once we start with a big school district like this, you know, the staff, we keep throwing stuff at them. Like today we started talking about buses, you know, going to and from events, whether it's a wrestling match, a field trip down to the museum. You know, they take your kids off campus and, okay, what's the established norm for the bus guys? Okay, when I pull up to a wrestling match or a football game, what do I expect to see in the parking lot? You know, soccer moms and dads grabbing their seats, getting their little foamy chairs, walking with whatever and making their way to the ticket booth, right? If I see something different, people huddled around, maybe they're looking, somebody's down, maybe it's a medical emergency, you just had a heart attack, I don't know, and I got my bus full of kids, can I keep driving straight? Get on the phone with, hey, we came here over to Glen Rock High School, the parking lot didn't look kosher, so we drove off, went down the street, found the King Supers, are we okay to go? Yeah, it was a medical emergency, somebody had a heart attack. Could that have been a gunman that teed off on people in the parking lot? Yeah. Do you want that guy stopping with the bus and trying to unload his kids in that aluminum pop can? No. But if we don't talk about these things, They won't ever think about it, right? We just had a rural Navajo school that was just like this, like your guys' middle school and other school, you know, that are right next to each other, where they had the cops chasing an armed person on foot. The buses were loaded for the high school kids. Elementary school's here, high school's here. They're in this big parking lot. They had 13 buses fully loaded with high school kids. It's a you know, 1,500 high school, right? They went into lockout. We call a lockout is you close the doors, nobody goes in or out because the PD's on a foot chase with an armed suspect. They never went over the bus route. You had 30-year bus drivers that are good people that drive these rural roads, probably fix their own bus with their broken hands, right? They're usually really resourceful people. They sit there for 30 minutes ducked in their buses with trying to keep all the kids down. They said, we never felt so helpless, Joe. We didn't get called from security. They have 22 security guards on campus throughout the day because it's a really rural school where they have housing. They have, you know, the elementary school's down a quarter mile of the road. They have their bus barn down the street. They stayed there in that bus loop when all that gunman had to do was outrun the cops, jump on one of those buses or just start spraying and praying. It's going to go right through that aluminum bus shell. But they said, we just stayed there. And we went to the best bus barn this next trip because we had time to do the bus guys because we're not, you know, we got the staff faculty all trained up. And I said, well, why didn't you just take off? You know, we have like truckers have like names, you know. I was like, hey, big, I don't know, I called them like big roller or something, you know, some truck driver name like on their CVs. I said, why didn't you just take off, start driving, and the rest of those buses staff probably would have followed you. Do we care where you go? Just drive off campus, go down the street across, you'd be in the Navajo, you know, PD's parking lot a mile and a half away. They said, we never thought about that. They kept their buses stacked for 30 minutes and felt so helpless because they never went over in training, you know, and they're waiting for security or the superintendent, somebody to get on the CB and say, okay, guys, roll out. Just go get lost. Let us know where you go, but don't stay on campus. But they don't think of those things under that moment. So each trip we come out, we just don't go the same stuff. Now, the kids we do because they get older and they get different programs. But for the staff, this is our second trip here. Today was very easy. We got to do a little more with them. Next year when we come back, you know, we can do tourniquets, quick clot, give them trauma care. We can go to the bus barn for 4 hours, set up something over there, stack up buses. Okay, how would you get your, you know, like, because you guys at your elementary school, right? The middle school kids come out and they stand outside. They wait for the little kids, K-2, to come over and load the buses first. If I came from the neighborhood with my AR, I mean, where do those kids go in the buses? If we don't practice it, okay, I can't get all my kids off. So do we need to put a staff member to where they can see on the other side of those buses as an overwatch? Because if I start teeing off from my backyard, from the woods, I'm hitting that bus a bunch of times and no one's going to know. But we're waiting on the K-2 to come out because we want them to sit, or I guess to take their seat first, you know, so they're not interrupted. Well, maybe we have the middle schoolers go on the bus first, sit in the back. Then if something happens while we're waiting, we can take off, you know, because I hear that I came up with that today. They're asking me, like, well, we feel a little weird because what if something happens outside? Because they're doing shock and awe from outside. The last 6 years, why are they, whether it's a supermarket, El Paso Walmart, Parkland, all these grocery store shootings, why are they starting from the parking lots out? Because they assume that in 2023, we have training. Maybe physical security, technology that's going to slow me down. You know, you barricaded, you evacuated. So I'll start my body count from the front. Lock me down here. Your intercoms don't work outside. And we don't have that structure. So they're doing shock and awe. So when they meet some resistance, their body count's already 8. They come in here, hit a couple key card doors. Everybody's shucking and driving in here because we do have some training. They want to go and they're playing video games, right? They're popping out, guns loaded, on their seat, putting a GoPro on, turning it on like the Buffalo shooter in New York. And our supermarket shooter obviously started in the thing. El Paso Walmart before COVID. 2 hours later, the SWAT team found him in his car. He gets out of his car, pops the trunk, puts on ear protection, goes in there, shoots up that Walmart and the shopping mall. 2 hours later, the SWAT team finds him in the car. They're not trying to escape, right? The only one to die lately in the last 7 years has been Uvalde, right? He didn't take his own life. Border Patrol killed him an hour and 52 minutes too late. But the problem is they're hovering around these campuses, even in town. They're not trying to go away. They want to go to prison. So I catch you slipping, you know, an hour into it. Now you're number 13. But they're also starting from the parking lot because they assume they'll meet some sort of resistance, and they also assume the cops are going to be here and not pull Uvalde, and they're going to get in here and stop them. So each trip we come back, we just don't go over the same stuff with staff. It's just maintain, okay, quick peaks and angles. We all are good on that. Now, this time, let's set up a fake basketball game. You got parents in here and students. I come in to watch the basketball game, sit in the hut, pull out a gun in my backpack. You guys don't want people. What do? We got the visiting team, you know, from Sheridan. We got Buffalo High School teeing off at a basketball game, and I'm in the back. What are you going to do, staff? Well, I don't know. Everybody needs to start moving. People are going to get trampeded, but we can't freeze. We're out in the open. So each time we come back, we can just throw out some different things, just at least so people come up with a plan. You know, but if we don't come back for 5 years, you got half the new, you know, teachers retire. We get, you know, they get, they move off, they get whatever, and then we're starting from zero again. But we can limit it, get, you know, a little feed them each stuff each day.
We don't retire in Buffalo.
I know, apparently not.
Can I ask a question? Clearly, this is a very complicated issue, and you're talking a lot about empowering and reactions in the active shooter situation. Mm-hmm. There's a little time ahead of that. I don't know what that is, but does your program address at all indicators that may precurse an incident?
Like the red flags and the social media monitoring, that say something, say we don't. We are the response, right? There's companies that do that. And the teachers get training as far as what to look for. Not a psychologist, that's not my bread and butter. But that's part of, you know, the response, right? So definitely needed, and we encourage that. But ours is just the crisis response, right? That's the problem, kind of the monitoring. Whether it was stopped by law enforcement or safety tell, they didn't get it quick enough, or some kids knew but they didn't come forward. That's always been the standard thing. But that's not my rodeo. I don't specialize in that, so I don't mean to dive into it.
But I will answer.
But,
can I answer that?
Absolutely.
So knowing the other districts that have done this, and I've been through this for a long time, that is a natural thing. So when kids realize the severity of this and they start, you're empowering.
Oh.
So when we empower people to make decisions, we're empowering them to say, this isn't right, I need to go tell somebody.
Yeah.
So there is an extension of that, like, no, I don't want to go through this. So part of what Joe brings in is not just only these three different areas, but we don't want victims. So empowering people to make decisions. So it might not be the fact that we're looking at. It's like, this isn't right. Okay, some kid living off and saying, I'm going to go shoot up all the teachers. No, we're not going to let you do that in school, so we're going to report that piece. So it is an extension. Does he teach it? No. But these things that he does teach, when we talk about empowering people not to be victims and to take kind of control, because naturally, what do kids not want to do? They don't want to be the narc. They don't want to be the snitch, right? But when they understand the severity of this and they start seeing this and they see how it impacts some different people, you know, we have a first grader that shot a teacher that they searched his backpack, tried to search his backpack, but we also live in a society. Sorry, I should stand up. We're all afraid of a lawsuit. And I even heard that today. What am I covered? Am I going to get sued? We're going to get sued no matter what. So let's be real. The lawsuits will happen no matter what it is. But that piece of saying, you know what? Let's go to court because I actually opened your backpack and I pulled it out. Now, Charles as a superintendent is not an advocate of strip searches or anything like that. Let's be very clear that is not what we're looking for. But we are so afraid as a society to pull out a backpack and actually search it because we might get sued. Okay, if there's evidence that there's a gun, or you pull their books out, you check it, you pull everything out, you check every pocket, and parents might be upset, but I'm going to be okay with that because we are controlling something. So we got to get beyond that we're going to get sued type of thing and empower people to say it's okay. But I can, from my experience with staff in my previous district and others, is you're empowering kids and staff to make good decisions. Right? There's so much he can talk about tonight.
Yeah.
And I've been through all the trainings, but even the librarian that had people hide under tables and had an exit.
Right. At Columbine, right? That's all we're taught. Get down, get low. That next year exit. But we didn't experience that. Should get low, let the movies get down, get low. Then next year exit, you know, before the kids got shot.
But well, I'm going to say there's what he teaches here does
does create some of what you're talking about.
And it kind of did naturally, right? Because you they're part of the team. They're not left in the dark, right? So we do have inadvertently, right? So we went out to Newcastle, okay? And we did the kids. Then it was the next spring, and we were doing the elementary schools because we do their little bit bigger district like this, so we split it up sometimes for their budget. So we had Upton, right, area superintendent come down, and they were like, we want to see what you're doing with the kids, but think about having you out. So I didn't obviously coach. I didn't try to listen to his response, but I'm talking to the middle school teachers. I'm like, hey, it's August. We were out here last spring. We didn't get to say hi yet. We hit the road. Hey, what'd your kids say about the training? You know, did they like it? Did they think it was too long, too short, whatever? And they go, well, you know what? And somebody raised their hand. We had the new superintendents in the back. And they said, you know, we didn't have to use this, but a couple weeks after your training, two kids came to us with a safety issue. We felt like they wouldn't have maybe came if they weren't part of the program and they weren't the team, and we empowered them to make decisions and say something. They said they brought a real safety issue to our, we addressed it. It's still an ongoing, we can't talk about it, but it was fairly decent. But they didn't hesitate to come, and we felt like working with you, your team, saying, hey, don't rely on the staff. Y'all play a part here, whether it's the response or safety. You know, let's speak up. And right when they said that, I looked back there and I'm like, start writing the checks, right? You know, and the teacher, I couldn't have paid them to say that from the superintendent, right? It empowered those kids. They felt, because they knew their kids. You know, they know their kids. They said, I don't think they would have came had they not had the training. But so we didn't have to use it, but it helped us maybe avoid something. You know, because we include them. Otherwise, they don't feel like they're part of the team. But when you include them, they work together in that teamwork stages. They're like, okay, yeah. And you know what? We kind of talked to them a little bit, you know, in the big programs, you know, just, hey, see something right, you know, get with your teachers, you're part of the response, you're also part of the deterrent, treat people kind, do your thing, but if those things don't work, we all need to do something and help each other out. So that was kind of cool, you know, but that was kind of just a natural, you know, thing that happens, because it is a lot about empowerment. When we do the 3-hour class with the high school kids, it's about teamwork, communicating, prepping for a test, prepping for a big college event. You know, we get into not just, oh, it's active shooter, you're going to do this. It's very little of that. It's teamwork, communicating, why we function under pressure, whether it's a test, you know, an SATs, I'm asking my first date to homecoming, whatever it is in their world, they're stressed out, right? They don't want to fail in front of their peers, so we try to really relate to them. You know, big basketball game that's on the line and it goes to free throws, you know, the point guards practice that free throw millions of times because they're going to foul you, do your thing, and then, you know, it's automatic. But so we kind of try to relate to them, and by the time we're done, it's very little of the active shooter piece. It's more of, okay, teamwork, calm, under pressure, make good decisions, and it's fun, you know, but, yeah, so, all right. Okay, I think we do this. I'm going to show you the evacuations, and what I'll do for you, I'll get your information. I'll send you the link to the Parkland animation, you know, so you can see it.
My wife explained it.
I mean, it's cool, though. You can watch it, especially I'll show you the angles, and then watch it again, and you're going to be like, wow, okay, now I see why we teach this. It's pretty powerful. And we show it to the high school kids, you know. And here's what we do. It's kind of neat. We'll talk to the kids. We'll have them go and do all their different rotations. We'll bring them back into the auditorium and show them the Parkland animation. I could have 100 kids in here or 2,500 in Denver in a multi-story auditorium. It's a pin drop, right? They'll start watching it. And then when they see the third level, they're like, all at the same time, they're like, oh. Because they realized all the stuff we just spent 2.5 hours with them, that those kids would have lived. You can hear it in their reaction. They're like, oh, my God, why are they doing that? And I'm like, hey, these guys didn't have any of the training. When we were doing this for the last 2 hours, does this make sense now? And they understand it. We bring them back in here, and they're like, well, okay, this is why we're doing it, you know. So it's pretty powerful. It's a pretty cool experience. I get goosebumps when I think about it. All right, so let's kick you out of here. So grab your stuff. We're going to just show the quick peeks and angles on our way out so that, hey, you're out with your family, you're doing something, you guys can safely remove yourself back to a place or get out of here. Sound good? And we're going to do more of these community nights. Just give you the same stuff. But if you want to talk some more, just find the schedule. And also, we're doing a self-defense class on Wednesday. I'm not sure if it's full or not. It's for kids. It'll be at the middle school, I think.
There was 20 as of me coming here. So
cool.
20.
We got 10 more spots left if anybody wants their kids, high school and up.
Community meeting tomorrow night at Cloud Peak. The self-defense class is Wednesday night, and there's a community meeting in Casey. So.
Cool. All right, can we come back in here?